So, as you may have guessed from the guided meditation, I'm going to be speaking about the elements tonight and a little bit about what they are, how they fit into the Buddha's teachings, what the kind of teaching, how that teaching was shared in different ways, and how that fits with the overall, the larger Dharma teachings, larger teachings of the Buddha, and how to practice with them in your life, in your formal practice, and in your daily life. So, in terms of just starting with one of the discourses that's very central to the Buddhist teachings, the Satipatthana Sutta. In that one, there's the first Satipatthana, or the first establishment of mindfulness. The Satipatthana Sutta was the four establishments, or the four foundations of mindfulness. And the first establishment of mindfulness, or foundation, is the body, the physical body. And the second is feeling tone, pleasant, unpleasant, and neither. Unpleasant or pleasant. The third is the mind heart. And the fourth is kind of seeing conditionality in experience, seeing how causes and conditions cause things to arise and pass away. And the elements are actually one of the parts of the establishment of mindfulness of the body. So it starts with breathing, and then postures, and then activities, walking back and forth, and eating meals, and talking with others, and bathing and going to the bathroom, and that kind of thing. Then it goes to the anatomical parts. And then from the anatomical parts, it goes to the elements, and then into a corpse in decay. Seeing your own body as a, imagining your own body as a corpse in decay. And then it goes on from there. And in the Satipatthana Sutta, one reviews this same body, however it is placed, however disposed, as consisting of elements thus. In this body, there are the earth element, the water element, the fire element, and the air element. Sometimes called the wind element. And the four elements represent the four basic qualities of matter: the solidity, liquidity, temperature of the fire element, and motion, right, the air element. So earth, the physical sensations, the solid parts of the body. Anybody who's practiced with Philip Moffat for a while has some exposure to this, because he so often taught the earth element resting on earth in his guided meditations. The water, the liquid parts of the body, and also some of these other factors that we'll get to in a little, that I went over a bit in the guided meditation. The fire. Traditionally, it's the variations in the body temperature that can be felt. I think probably most commonly those are felt on the surface of the body, but sometimes they're felt deep within the body or in different parts. And it's also, it was not uncommon for the fire element also to be taught as being involved in digestion and aging. Digestion, if you think about it, that is. You're putting fuel on the fire, right? That's you're putting. If you want to run the train, if you want the train to get from here to there, you got to shovel that coal into the furnace, right? We need that digestion as that fuel to keep us going. And then the air element or the wind element, movements inside the body, the breathing being the one that is noticed for me most readily. Tingling, vibration, that kind of thing. Okay, so what's the purpose of this? Why did the Buddha teach the elements? Anybody want to share your experience, or We could treat this as a rhetorical question. You're welcome to do that too, and I can carry on. But if you want to say something, you can at some point. Who are you pointing to? Oh, we have one. Oh, Mary Kelly. Great.
So art.
Yes.
I took the element class with you, and I really like it when Philip does it. For me, one of the things it does is it really helps me have the felt sense in my body, to just not to be thinking about my body, but it really drop in and drop in, not as without so much ego, just being. It has a real sense of beingness. And so for me, using the elements is just an easier way to just feel the beingness of all aspects of my body. And without.
You're going in and out of it. Mary. You're going in and out a bit, I think, Mary.
Did I go one way? That's what I had. What I was saying is it really allows me to have the felt experience and the beingness of the earth and the air and the water and the fire, and not so much about Mary Kelly, but more about that felt experience that I could just really drop into and not have a whole lot of other discourse going on, but just knowing that, you know. So that to me is you know, is a better way to get to that place of in my body.
Great. And I really think that that's what the Buddha was doing. He was moving us toward a kind of a healthy non-attachment, and a healthy disidentification with the body. What's good about that? Well, it leads toward greater equanimity, toward freedom, toward greater freedom, which I think in my practice, over my many years of practice, there can be a tendency to measure how am I coming along in my practice, which I think maybe has a little bit of usefulness, but mostly has been a source of just judging and things like that, and not very useful. But I think that getting really just even the very gradual movement, the very gradual progression towards slightly greater freedom, I think it's really something that's very useful in the practice, about the practice, and very useful about the elements. There was a question, somebody chatted about the fire element and how is that related to aging? And that's a good question. I don't know. I don't have a crystal clear answer to that. Some ideas that come to mind, certainly it's like this life is, you can think of life as having fire. There has to be fire in the body. And we got to keep that fire going. You have to keep that fire going all the time. And over the progression of life, that fire in our youth can be really strong and robust, and we can really wear ourselves out, and it's not really a problem. But then as we get older, we have to learn to take better care of ourselves, and the waves of it come differently. I don't know if that helps. Something for reflection to see what's true for you. I know I went out for a hike yesterday. Heather and I were stir crazy and wanted to get out. We went for a hike and we couldn't get out real early. So we went after lunch and we thought, oh, we'll go down to Pinole Regional Park. It's right on the bay. It'll be a little cooler down there. Yeah, well, maybe it was a little cooler. It was, you know, 91 instead of 94 or something like that. But I just kind of roasted there. And really, like after coming home, I just drank. I drank a lot of water while I was hiking. And then I drank a ton more after I got back. And first just felt really out of it. And it took a long time for me to come back. So certainly I feel like that fire element getting out of balance and or having to work with it differently than I might have when I was in my 20s and 30s. That's for sure. So the Buddha, there are a number of discourses where the Buddha talks about the elements. And when he does, there's often a segment like this. Let me find it in here. And here we are. Okay. What, friends, is the earth element? The earth element may be either internal or external. What is the internal earth element? Whatever internally belonging to oneself is solid, solidified, and clung to. That is, get ready, we're going to get a list of parts of the body. That is, head hairs, body hairs, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinews, bones, bone marrow, kidneys, heart, liver, diaphragm, spleen, lungs, intestines, mesentery, contents of the stomach, feces, and whatever else internally belonging to oneself is solid, solidified, and clung to. This is called the internal earth element. Now, both the internal earth element and the external earth element are simply earth elements. The internal earth element, what's in this body? The external earth element, I have this earth element of this computer right here. There's the earth element of the chair that I'm sitting on. There is the wind element. I can feel the vibrations of the, you may feel the breeze moving. I can feel the vibrations in my body as I'm speaking. So this now both the internal earth element and the external earth element are simply earth element. And that should be seen as it actually is with proper wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. When one sees it thus as it actually is with proper wisdom, one becomes disenchanted with the earth element and makes the mind dispassionate towards the earth element. Okay, so I want to say a little bit about these, about this. We'll unpack this a little bit. And I want to talk about this is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. So just seeing the impersonal nature of the body, and this is simply a tool, the elements are simply a tool to use to see this more clearly, to have this experience directly. I have my own body. I don't confuse that with somebody else's body. We all are individuals in that way. And yet there's so much more that is shared in terms of our experience. We all have this experience of the elements. Okay. When one sees it with proper wisdom, one becomes disenchanted with the earth element. And of course, this gets repeated for earth element, water element, fire element, wind element. One becomes disenchanted with that element and makes the mind dispassionate towards that element. I want to say a little bit about these words, disenchantment and dispassionate. So that disenchantment, as if the way we normally live is in a state of enchantment, as Eugene Cash has said, as if we were living under a spell, right? And what is that spell? That spell of sense, that spell of believing in a lasting self, that spell of believing that we can get it right, right? If I can just maneuver this way, and if things go well in this conversation with my son, and if this happens, and if the check comes in the mail, until, you know, everything's going to be perfect. No. Okay. So the Buddha is not saying there's not such no such thing as a self. The Buddha did not have any confusion about who he was. He knew he was the Buddha. There was no, that's not, not self wasn't saying there was no such thing as any of that. What he was saying is that what we use to construct this sense of self is not lasting and it's not under our control. And back at that time, apparently, from what I've heard from the scholars, that was something, those were a couple things that were seen as being required conditions of being permanent or of having a self. If you have a self, you're in control. You're in control of it. We don't really have much control there. So we are individuals. We have our individual histories, our experiences, and yet our overall experience is largely impersonal. It arises, it flows on. Seeing the elements in this way is one way to relate to that, to see the kind of the made up nature, the way we construct this sense of self over and over, and how much grasping and dis-ease that leads to. So the Buddha is saying that instead, with that disenchantment, that you can use these to see the inherently, to see this inherently impersonal nature of experience. The elements have no inherent me-ness. There's no my fire element and Mary Kelly's water element and Bill Coffin's water element or earth element, whichever element you prefer. We all get all of them, right? So seeing the elements internally, seeing and sensing them, that felt sense, and then seeing them externally is very helpful. It can help to kind of cool those fires, those passions that burn us. And speaking of passions, the other word that I wanted to talk to in that trope from the Buddha is dispassionate. Passion comes from the Latin passere, meaning to suffer, right? We think of passion as I want passion in my life, or at some point in our lives, we may have wanted that passion. These days, we're maybe more like, okay, I'm okay, I'm good. But the Buddha is not talking about passion in terms of giving up our will to live or giving up our energy or our juice for life or that which helps us feel alive and gives us a sense of connectedness and meaning. He's not talking about that. He's talking about getting off the wheel of having the primary orientation of our lives be around getting more of the pleasant and getting rid of the unpleasant, which is often in our, I think how most of us in an unquestioned way, if there's no questioning, that is how we're kind of wired to live. Okay. And there is that cartoon of the two mice. And they're in their cage. They each have their own exercise wheel. And one of them is on the wheel and it's scampering on the wheel and running hard. The other one is on the wheel. The other one is sitting at the bottom of the wheel, one leg crossed over the other. And it's saying to the first mouse, I had an epiphany. You know, it's that we have that way of... we have that opportunity. I think that's a great Dharma cartoon there. And unfortunately, through habits and causes and conditions and karma and that kind of thing, I think we have some kind of natural tendency to live more like the first mouse. And yet Dharma practice can move us, can get us to be more like that second mouse. So... yeah, so I was able to work rodents into the Dharma talk this evening. So we're going to look at a different discourse here. In this one, this is the greater discourse of advice to Rahula, who was the Buddha's son. In this discourse, supposedly he's getting to be about the age of 18. He asks, in this discourse, at first he's talking with Sariputta, And then while the Blessed One is out on alms round, and then when the Blessed One comes back from alms round, Blessed One being his dad, he goes to him and he says, well, how is mindfulness of breathing developed and cultivated so that it is of great fruit and great benefit? So Rahula asked about mindfulness of breathing, and the Buddha takes him through the elements first. And he talks about what it is, that the earth element, there are the different parts of the body, right? So this has, the earth element is 19 parts of the body are in there. The other 12 are in the water element. And then there's the fire element, the air element, and the space element. And then after he's gone through these descriptions of the elements, he turns to Rahula and he says, Rahula, develop meditation that is like earth. For when you develop meditation that is like the earth, arisen agreeable and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. Remember that phrase. Just as people throw clean things and dirty things, excrement, urine, spittle, pus, and blood on the earth, and the earth is not repelled, humiliated, and disgusted because of that, so too, Rahula, develop meditation that is like the earth. For when you develop meditation that is like the earth, arisen, agreeable, and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. Okay. And he goes on with that. He continues on with that, with the other elements, with each of the elements. None of the elements takes things personally. The Buddha is saying to cultivate the sense of being like earth in terms of not being repelled, humiliated, and disgusted. He's saying that if we can associate with the earth, if we can just feel that impersonal nature of the earth and relate to it and even reflect, this is almost includes some amount of reflection. The earth, we have built up the earth. We have built things all over it. We have dug humongous mines as a race of humans. We have caused tremendous harm to the earth, clear cutting, things like that. The earth is not offended. It's not humiliated. It's not disgusted. How can we cultivate that attitude? He's saying, the Buddha's saying, this will lead towards a greater sense of common equanimity with things just as they are. That we do not have to make things different from how they are in order to accept them, in order to be with them. With the, yes, but this is really, you know, the Buddha talked about a happiness that was not dependent on conditions, a freedom that was not dependent on conditions, on getting things the way they want them. And this is the sense of the well-being that can be with non-well-being that the Buddha pointed to. Okay, with the political landscape right now in this country, I don't know about you. I'm guessing some of you feel similarly. But for me, it certainly has been easy to get worked up and angry at times. So really needing to cultivate some skillfulness around that, you know. What would it be like, you know? And the Buddha was saying, for when you develop meditation, it's like earth arisen, agreeable and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. You know, if you can do that, that might be the kind of PhD level practice, if you could do that with our current political atmosphere. But some people probably can maintain some equanimity, some sense of calm there. And if you can't, then our practice is to pause, come back with mindfulness to our experience, right? And then we can come back to what we're doing. We can kind of titrate it back and forth. With mindfulness, Once again, the Buddha did not teach mindfulness as a way to change experience. He taught it as a way to know experience and to open to experience. So how do we cultivate that? That's a big question. The short-term answer is practice, and the long-term answer is practice. The Buddha was saying that we can use the elements in this way. Venerable Anallo, in his Satipatthana practice guide, includes the elements in that practice. He has compared the Theravadan discourses with some that were Theravadan but were picked up along the Silk Road and taken to Tibet or China. And he's gone and found those and translated them. And then he compares them with the Theravadan version. And he has some sense of, oh, well, this Theravadan one, I don't see this in the other groupings. Maybe it was a later edition. Or there's some change. The Tibetan one is like the Chinese one, but different from the Theravadan one. Oh, maybe something was added to the Theravadan one or changed there. Or likewise with some of the other ones. And then for he and the other scholars, they can make some argument as to which may have been introduced later or which may be more genuine. So he has kind of, for his practice of Satipatthana, in the Satipatthana practice guide, he's kind of whittled things down a bit. He does include the parts of the body, the anatomical parts, but he has developed kind of a short script for that of skin, flesh, and bones. So he does those for the anatomical parts. But for the elements, he does all four elements. So you could look at that. You could look to his book. It's a wonderful book. I think after I'd read his first book on Satipatthana, and there were other ones coming out, I kind of thought, come on, what more can you really say about the Satipatthana? The answer is a lot. The answer is plenty. I have found all of his books to be great resources. And he has several guided meditations on Satipatthana that you can find online through his publisher, Windhorse Publications. I think that's where I've seen them. And as he says in that book, the Satipatthana meditation, a practice guide, he says, the gist of the practice is simply about no longer taking the body so very personally and learning to relate to it without self-investment. Really sums it up. He talks about the anatomical parts, which of course comes just before the elements in the Satipatthana Sutta. The anatomical parts, a way to deal with attachment to bodily beauty. And there's a simile in that discourse about the parts of the body, just as though there were a bag with an opening at both ends, full of many sorts of grain, such as hill rice, red rice, beans, peas, millet, and white rice. And a person with good eyes were to open it and review it thus. This is hill rice. This is red rice. These are beans. These are peas. This is millet. This is white rice. So too, a bhikkhu, a dedicated practitioner, reviews this same body as full of many kinds of impurity thus. In this body, there are head hairs, body hairs, nails, teeth, skin, etc. So we can see that pretty impersonal there. And then when we get to the four elements, again, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu reviews the same body, however it is placed, however disposed, as consisting of elements thus. In this body, there are the earth element, the water element, the fire element, and the air element. And it gets pretty graphic here. Just as though a skilled butcher or his apprentice had killed a cow and was seated at the crossroads with it cut up into pieces, so too a bhikkhu reviews the same body as consisting of elements thus. In this body, there are the earth element, the water element, the fire element, and the wind element. Pretty graphic. As Venerable Anālayo says in his book, Satipatthana, A Practice Guide, he sees this is, you know, if you compare this with the 31 parts of the body and how those are described, a piece of grain, here's some rice, here's a bean, here's some millet. That's quite impersonal, but the four elements gets more gruesome. He talks about a cow being butchered, and Anālayo has this to say: given the high regard afforded to cows in ancient India and the emphasis among practitioners like the Jains on not harming any living being, the example seems intentionally shocking. In the Tibetan version, what had been a cow is now no longer talked about as a cow. It's talked about as parts, the feet, the heart, the tendons, the loins. Yeah. So the Buddha is stepping it up. If we didn't get the message about not taking the body personally from the anatomical parts, from the parts of the body, then we should really look closely with the elements. And then, of course, as an aside, we're not going to go into the Satipatthana much more this evening, but of course, those of you who know the Satipatthana discourse well, the next one that would be the next element or the next piece that's coming would be the reflections on the corpse in different stages of decay, imagining this body as if it were a corpse. Okay, so how to practice with the elements? In formal practice, you can work with it just kind of as Philip has done in guided meditations, as I did in this guided meditation. You can do that during sitting time, feeling the felt sense of the elements in the body. You can also do it outside of sitting time, right? But either way, if you don't feel or you don't relate to one or more of these elements, you can just keep practicing with them. You get to learn to develop your experience of these over time. And anybody who's practiced with Philip for any time, you certainly have some experience with the earth element resting on earth. He's certainly done that one a lot. The earth element, that solidity, that sense of grounding, that sense of stillness. And we don't need to have whatever level of grounding or stillness beyond what we have. When we reflect on that, we simply get to invite the earth element there and then just notice whatever degree of grounding or stillness is present and be with that. In my experience, there can be pretty profound levels of grounding and stillness that are available. So there is that. So I think there may be more opportunity for a deepening with those for many people. The wind element is likewise a good one to start with. You can feel the breath. You can feel how when the breath comes in, it pushes the chest out. It pushes the back out. You can feel that expansion in the belly. Just feeling that, feeling the wind blowing into and out of the body. It could be for you that tingling or vibrate more how you feel the breath. Thumbs up. Just do with it as you will. That's fine. We're feeling the breath as a wave or as a pulsation, the energy of it. All of these are good ways to be with the wind element. I've really come to appreciate that being with the earth element and the stillness, the relative stillness of the earth element, and then bringing in the breath, the wind element, and the movement of the wind element, and the movement and stillness right there, and how they can support each other in practice. And sometimes, no, I need more stillness here. And then, no, let's be with the movement more. You can go back and forth between these two. fire element can often be quite accessible, certainly in terms of that experience of temperature in the body. Water is, of those four elements, water is often one that is harder for, I would say, for most people. If it's easier for you, wonderful. That's great. There are different lists of characteristics of the elements. Some of the characteristics of the earth element are hardness, heaviness, things like that. Of the wind element, that pushing, the tingling and vibration. And of the water element, some of the common characteristics of the water element are fluidity and cohesion. And for me, cohesion, I could not relate to that at first. But there is that, if you're at the beach, if you've ever been to the beach, there's been someplace where there's sand, and the sand is dry, and you want to make a sand ball, packed ball, or if you want to make a sand castle. If the water is completely dry, you pick it up and it simply spills out everywhere. But if you add water to it, add the right amount of water to it, or go down closer to where the waves are reaching the shore, and then you scoop your bucket there, then there it's held together. That water binds the sand. It helps hold it together. The body is something like 60% water, the human body. It is, to some extent, actually holding us together. You can have some sense of that. Feeling that sense of flowing, the sense of flowing in the body, of different sensations in the body. They can be pleasant sensations or unpleasant, but feeling that flow there. Another experience of cohesion. My wife and I were doing this, trying to branch out and trying this new recipe. And we found this recipe for lentil balls with a Pakistani curry, okay? But the balls, it tells us how to cook the lentils and then grate the potatoes and grate the onions and add the spices and that kind of thing. And then it just says, you cook the lentils until they've absorbed the water. And then it says just to, it said something like, add flour until it becomes pliable. Neither one of us is a baker at all. So we're at a bit of a loss there as to, we just put a little sprinkle on. And we just kept adding more and more until we finally got it there. And then when it got there, we were able to recognize when we could roll them into balls and not have them sticking to our hands. Then we're like, oh, this is the right amount there. Okay. But it needed that right amount of the water element and the earth element to be bound together. And if you have worked with the elements a bit in the physical body, you can work with the elements in things like emotions and in thoughts. Anger often has a lot of the fire element, and it often has that heat part of the fire element. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes with certain kind of rage, it has the cold part of the fire element, right? That can, it's another experience there. But you get to explore and see this. And in my experience, emotions often have a lot of water elements to them, a lot of fluidity. You know, they can really spread in the body, in the mind, heart, that kind of thing. In daily life, we can reflect on the elements when eating. We take in food, which is mostly, probably mostly the earth element, and though it does have some of the other elements mixed in there, right? We drink the water elements. We take in liquid, either water itself or tea or coffee or other beverages that have a lot of the water element in them. With the fire element, we may use that to make our food more appealing, to have it hotter or cooler, right? And then we also interact with the fire element during our day to bring greater comfort to ourselves, to bring greater coolness or heat to things, adding a layer, putting on a jacket, or trying to find a place over the last several days of the heat wave, trying to find a place that's cooler. Where can we cool off? And then the wind element, the breath. You know, we can simply reflect on how much we rely on these four. The human body can go without food, without solid food for many days. Can go without water only for a few to several days at most, you know, it'll depend on conditions. And without the fire element, it's really going to depend. The fire element can be very overwhelming if it gets too hot or too cold, depending on what situations we're in. And then the wind element, of course, we have to have this breath. We can't survive more than a few minutes without it. All right, so just seeing that, seeing how dependent we are on these four. Venerable Anallio, in his Satipatthana Meditation, a practice guide, when he talks about the butcher cutting up the cow, he then turns it to a reflection in daily life on social justice. All forms of discrimination based on gender or race can be butchered by attending to the elements. We are all composed of these same elements. Once this is realized, material distinctions between human beings are revealed to lack any true substance. According to quantum physics, the body is for the most part just empty space. The physical difference between the beautiful young model on stage and the old beggar by the side of the road is so minimal as to be negligible. How could such a difference be truly significant? What basis do we have for identifying ourselves as a member of a particular group with certain physical marks considered to be fundamentally different from another group with other physical characteristics? So I hope this reflection has been useful. We can look at the elements and use them to see more clearly the impersonal nature of experience. And I offered some ideas of how you could do that in formal practice and some ideas of how you could do it off the cushion. And are there any questions or comments? Yes, Lucia. Lucia, you need to take yourself.
There you go. So you talked about, let me think about this just for a moment. The earth not quote minding, that's my word, you know, the action.
Yeah.
The earth doesn't even seem to be bothered.
Right.
However, when we as people, when we ravage the earth and we damage the earth, what does that do to us? I mean, we have our own, you know, what does that do to us?
Oh, that's certainly, in terms of the elements,
yes.
The Buddha said that about the earth. I think if the Buddha were alive today, he probably would have he may very well have some pointed things to say about our relationship to how we have used up the planet and the resources mm-hmm. here. Mm-hmm. So I'm not in any way suggesting that that is has been skillful at all. I think it's been more rapacious and driven more by greed and delusion than anything else.
So it doesn't appear as if we've learned much since the time of the Buddha about how we could care for the earth and keep the earth from being ravaged and destroyed and harmed.
Yeah. That's a good question. I haven't seen much in the discourse. I think the Buddha certainly seemed to live in a way mm-hmm. where he had a light impact on the earth. He did not have any house, and he had no permanent residence. Mm-hmm. The way of living that he espoused and that his followers espoused was living very simply. They had the set of robes they were wearing, and then they had a spare set of robes, mm-hmm. and they had their bowls, and they had something to shave with. And that was, it was pretty much that. They may have had some simple items for personal hygiene, but that was about it, really just for bathing. Yeah, so I don't know that he really weighed in on environmental issues per se, and that wasn't what I was wanting to teach about, but more that reflection of seeing how the earth, it does not seem to take offense. Buddha was not saying it is skillful to tear up the earth and treat the earth poorly. That was not what he was saying at all.
Yeah, I got that.
Yeah.
I just, if we were to dial forward from the Buddha's time to our time, the number of people who are now inhabiting the earth has increased exponentially millionfold. And so maybe it's up to us to reflect on the conditions now. I mean, this is very simple, and I'm sure that you'll agree, probably agree with me, and I do that all the time. You know, I look at little bugs and I think, come on, baby, you can go outside where you belong. Or, you know, I look at the trees around me and I look at the, and I think, what can I do as a person to protect that simple thing, the earth, keep from.
Right.
If the earth doesn't hurt, I hurt. And since I am part of the earth as a person and the elements, you know, I guess in some respects, the earth does hurt. I don't know. I'm kind of rambling right now, but thank you very much, Art, for such a...
Yeah, welcome. I think I think reflecting on what our impact is on the earth is a, mm-hmm. a very useful exercise in finding mm-hmm. ways to reduce our impact. And we had the climate change day long, right. And hopefully more
and comes out. I think it's in little things, you know, like I just said, if I see a bug in the house and it doesn't belong in the house, I'll just say, come on, honey, let's go back outside where you belong, rather than swatting the bug. You know, it's
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
just,
it's a good example of compassion.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Art. That was really interesting. For me, being new to Buddhist practice, I haven't ever heard the elements discussed.
Uh-huh.
I'm an acupuncturist and I use the elements in my work. So I was trying to kind of make sense of the difference, and the way I hear you, or what I got from it, was it's another way to assess, like when you're sitting or just out in your life, to like just see, just to witness these elements, as opposed to how I work with them. I see where the disharmony is and then I play with it. So it's like really different. And yet there's similar qualities to each of the elements.
Right.
We discussed that fire
when you're talking about old age, there's like, we discuss it as like, there's a pilot light at the base of your spine, your kidney yang, and it heats up your food. It cooks your food. And so if that pilot light is too low, it won't cook your food. You'll end up undigested food, you know, bloating, whatever. So it's just interesting to see the two different ways of looking at this, and hard for me to not want to see it and fix it because I'm so used to doing that, and to see it as just part of just like meditation where you just, you notice.
Right. Yeah. 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 Those are two quite, they're two fairly different models, but they do, I'm sure they have, I don't know enough about Chinese medicine. You're strong in that part, so you can
leave. Yeah, they overlap. Drink.
Yeah. The Buddha did primarily when the Buddha was teaching the elements, it was really, there are these three characteristics of experience in the Buddha's teachings, and that they are anicca or impermanence, or seeing the process like nature of experience, how experience is a process, right? And there's dukkha, the often translated as suffering, though I don't, dukkha is so much bigger than that. It's the kind of unsatisfactory nature of experience. And then anatta, or not self, the not self characteristic. He wasn't saying that people didn't exist. He wasn't saying there's no Karina, or there's no Corey, or there's no Lucia. He was saying there's no lasting permanent self. And this teaching on the elements, to me, is really getting at that, that sense of kind of the not self characteristic, how impersonal our experience is. And so it can be a useful tool in that way in his teachings to help us get some more sense, a little more, even a hint of more freedom in our lives. So.